Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Diving into some more rookie board discussion. And we had a very, very, very lively debate in the Analytics of Dynasty group meet today. And so I figured, well, I guess yesterday, as you're hearing this on Sunday. So I'm recording this Sunday night. And there was some really good discussion in the had lots of phenomenal ideas, honestly, going back and forth. And I'll say this, and I said this in the GroupMe chat, I think that I have always believed that the best way to sort of sharpen your argument or to make you smarter is to hear why you're wrong. And, you know, if you sort of hear a really good argument for why you're wrong, like it makes you rethink it, it makes you reevaluate. It makes you, question your process and basically work back through it. And I did that a lot and it was really good. It was a really interesting debate, and made me think about, some things in some very different ways. So the debate was almost entirely surrounding Trey Sermon. And so Trey Sermon is in the third tier on my board, and I would take him. So it's worth noting there's four guys in the top tier. Again, this could be a mini tier. Trevor Lawrence is probably the one there. I think if you have 101, you take him. I think you're just giving up too much like market value, honestly, to not take him. I get the argument against it. I mean, I can formulate a good argument for why you take Harris over him, and I don't think that that's necessarily poor process. I would take Lawrence first, or trade down. I just think there's too much equity in the trade down to not do it. And if that's a pivot, right? If that's maybe a pivot to another position, something like that, it's all fine. Or a pivot from another, you know, a deal from depth, basically. You know, you trade, you take Lawrence and then you trade, I don't know, Stafford for, you know, picks or players or whatever, right? I mean, you know, that's all stuff that you could do. I think I would definitely deal from strength would be my thought. If I take Lawrence or pivot off of Lawrence specifically, but I don't think I would take any of the other top guys in that tier above him. I think Harris, ETN, and Pitts all have interesting arguments. I think the argument is in favor of Harris over ETN. And a tight end premium, if you want to take Pitts too, I have no real problem with that. If it's start two tight end, I don't necessarily have a problem with that either, of taking Pitts, you know, if it's super flex and two tight end, like I could see an argument for Pitts at one. I'm in one of those leagues, so I'll be really interested to see sort of how that goes. The next tier is tier two. So that's tier one. And tier two is Lance, Fields, Wilson. So basically the remainder of the top 10 quarterbacks, Javonte Williams and Ja'Marr Chase. I do think Javonte Williams and Ja'Marr Chase belong in the same tier. If given the option, I would choose Chase over Williams, but I do think that that is a separate and distinct tier from the tier above it and the tier below it. I think you can make an argument with Javonte Williams, you know, over Zach Wilson, for example. And historically, you can go with a second round running back over a first round wide receiver. That is essentially a fair fight, historically odds and that sort of thing. You know, one of the other things too that sort of really guides me in thinking about rookie drafts is if you go back historically, and I did this pod earlier in the off season, and it really, really, it was really interesting, was that basically if you just didn't take wide receivers in the first round of rookie drafts, you were way ahead, just way, way, way ahead. And I think like, that's really interesting. Typically it's you draft you know, round one and round two running backs and the tight ends and basically just avoid the wide receivers, you're ahead. And if that's going to be the case, right, like I like Ja'Marr Chase, but I don't love making a ton of exceptions for rules. He is one that I'm going to make an exception for over Williams, right? I'm going to, you know, and I think that's a close bet. I think you can go either way. I don't think people typically see that as a close bet. I do. I see that as a pretty close bet historically. Of course, that's on a base rates basis. So you use your own intelligence and you move from base rates, right? You move either up or you move down from them with your own personal judgment. And so that's one of the things that's kind of why I really like it, is this is a scenario where, hey, I can kind of apply the difference. I can make the appropriate change. I know sort of historically it's pretty close between the two. And as a result, I can move Chase above Williams, right? And so that's really the thing. You can look at other situations, you know, for example, last year, there was an argument for Dylan above some of the other guys. And, you know, I ultimately did that and I regret it, but the numbers are actually pretty close. You know, when you look at it, running backs, for example, 58% of running backs have hit in the first 4 years. In round two, that's 47% for wide receivers. Again, so that's a pretty big difference there. When you look at the top two starter seasons in that range, it's slightly favors wide receivers. So basically the way I sort of read that is basically almost half the guys that hit at wide receiver end up hitting twice for top half seasons, right? So that's pretty good. Whereas if you're looking at running backs, you know, second round running backs, it's basically a third of them hit for multiple seasons. So it's really an elite density type of argument. And then you could sort of go back and forth and debate kind of about like, hey, is it, you know, from a WART perspective, which one matters? You know, you could sort of do that, cash out, all that stuff. But I think generally speaking, I think they're, you could sort of, pick and choose about which one you like, but second round running backs have been plus EV over wide receivers, in recent years. I sort of know that, but I know that Chase is a really good first round wide receiver. We're not talking about Marquise Brown. We're not talking about, some of the other guys in this class that have weak profiles. Ja'Marr Chase, dominant, 19 years old, against pro first round wide receivers, a bunch of them. And so I have a really good understanding that he's good. I think you could make the argument and go the other way. And I don't think it's, this isn't the scenario I would do that in, but I think in other places, like that's why I would have Javonte Williams over Devontae Smith. That's why I have Javonte Williams over Bateman, every other wide receiver in this class I would do that with. So that is why, like, that's the basis for why. The other thing too, when you sort of look at this, and this will, I'll get to this in a second. When you just take running backs, when you just look at the top half of startup ADP, the first round of rookie draft ADP going back to 2008, and I measure it through 2016-2017 range is how I sort of measure it. When you look at that, what you'll see is it's about a 62% hit rate through the first 4 years. And the running backs in the first round hit 68% of the time. They hit 68% of the time for first round, if they have a first round ADP. So that's a really robust hit rate. And honestly, that puts you kind of at the some of the breakout adjusted hit rates that I use for, you know, just when I sort of bin guys together. That's about what Ja'Marr Chase is. So that 18, 19 year old breakout and a first round wide receiver, that's about what Ja'Marr Chase is. And when you sort of look at that, you know, that first round running back, the running backs drafted in the first round of rookie drafts match with that. So, I mean, that's kind of how elite you need to be to really put yourself in the conversation above other running backs in the first round of drafts. Again, that is assuming that the running backs have an ADP in the first round. You know, if they don't, it's a little bit different. You know, that market data will tell you some of that stuff, which I think is important. When you look just at the wide receivers in the first round of rookie drafts, it's 52%. Right? So that's well lagging the overall hit rate of the position. And so that's a big deal. That's why a lot of selectiveness. And honestly, if you just like if over the past, you know, decade you hadn't drafted a wide receiver in the first round of rookie drafts, if you just never did it, you'd be way ahead. You'd just be way ahead. And so I come at it with a very skeptical, like the wide receivers really need to prove something. The other thing too that I would say is when I sort of look at the data about wide receivers, I tend to, this is simplistic. So I'll just sort of as a general rule, bad metric first round wide receivers. So guys that break out kind of late. And this is assuming they break out. This isn't the Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle thing. Assuming that they break out, the late, right? So after basically 19 years old, so 20, 21, 22, and they're in the first round, they about equal what I would consider a good breakout in the second round. So that's 18, 19 years old, right? Those profiles largely look very similar. And so that's, right, when you sort of look at this, you know, and that it's behind the elite breakouts in the first round. So when you sort of look at this board, what I see is, generally speaking, I see a lot of very similar profiles, right? If you're sort of coming at it from just that sort of base rates, you know, player agnostic, just looking at profiles, if you sort of look at it, it's very, you know, it's very similar. So you've got good, you've got really good profiles, Elijah Moore. You've got, you know, Rondale Moore, for example. You've got in the second round and of wide receivers. And you've got Bateman, too. So Bateman's a first-round guy. But when you sort of look at the second-round guys, it's Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, Terrace Marshall, right? All of those guys, you know, they have the good, what I would consider, like, the quote, good breakouts. 18, 19 years old, and you're looking, you know, 42% or so, 43% or so on average from that group hit for a top 24 seasonal finish. When you look at the guys that are, you know, the bad breakouts, as first round wide receivers, they're actually less than that. So they're somewhere in the low 30s, 31, 32%, somewhere in that range. You know, so I think the sample size is not huge. So you could say, like, you know, I'm not sure it's statistically significant difference there in terms of you take the better day two prospect over the round one guys. But like that's sort of the tier, the bucket that I put them in, because I think they look very much alike. So when you sort of do that, right, and we'll take Bateman and put him aside for a second. But when you sort of do that, you can look at, you know, you can look at Devonta Smith. You know, we'll call Jalen Waddle in that tier, that breakout tier, even though he's not. I'll just put him there just for the sake of this argument. So you got Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, Terrace Marshall, and Kadarius Toney, all in that sort of bucket of either bad first-round wide receivers in terms of breakout age or good second-round wide receivers in terms of breakout age. I didn't include in this like Tutu Atwell just because I don't think that he's actually in the same bucket or sphere of the position. You know, and I don't sort of align him there. So I look at these guys and basically put Smith, Waddle, Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, Terrace Marshall, and Toney in a bucket. Again, I would have my preferences, and at cost, you know, that I would order them in the order that I just read them. You know, that would be the order in which I would put them. And so that's the, you know, that's really what my take on this is those guys look very similar. Bateman's a different story. So Bateman's got the elite breakout for a first round wide receiver. I could sort of nitpick a little bit, and I can go back and forth on some of the hit rate stuff with, you know, with or the odds, I guess, basically of Bateman going to Baltimore. You know, one of the things that I looked at with Baltimore specifically, again, we are concerned about. I don't do a lot of landing spot because a lot of landing spot changes, so I don't really worry too much about landing spot. I'm landing spot agnostic. I'm more pedigree based, and I'm more, you know, draft capital based. And because landing spot can really change, I look at that Bateman profile and I say, just tell me how you get an elite ceiling out of it. He has plenty of elite ability, but you're basically asking for Baltimore to throw the ball a lot more. I'm not necessarily adverse to that idea. You know, one of the things, they're a bottom five in terms of route run for wide receivers type team. And if you sort of think about that, like, why did they go out and draft a first round wide receiver? Well, they kind of know that that's a weakness, and they had a big time weakness at the position. That's why they went out and addressed it. That's the theory anyways. And you figure maybe they're going to throw more. They'll do more stuff with wide receivers, and that'll kind of balance them. The other thing, too, is they need to be able to put up elite, high ceiling, high, high point totals to beat Kansas City, right? And that's the world that if you're in the AFC, you need to be operating in. So I can see, and to do that, right, you need to be able to throw. So I can sort of see the argument for Bateman. Like, there could be better days ahead than Baltimore has offered. You know, the one thing I would say is we've seen what a 25% market share looks like in that offense. And it looks like Marquise Brown, because that's what he did. And, you know, I don't think anyone's super enthusiastic about that. Is Bateman better than Marquise Brown? Yes. How much better? How much more efficient? You know, and you could point to say, hey, listen, like AJ Brown, true. You could point to AJ Brown. AJ Brown's largely done this with touchdown efficiency. Is that something that stays? I mean, historically he could be an abnormality, for sure, but that's kind of what he would need to do to continue to be at that volume. Now, to be this dominant at that volume. Now, you could say, hey, listen, his targets are really going to go up. They don't have a ton of competition. I sort of get that argument too. But that's sort of the thing that I would say about Bateman. Like, if you're expecting A.J. Brown out of Bateman, you need a huge amount of touchdown variance for that to happen. And so that would be just the cautionary note. Again, I like the player, but in terms of ceiling, you need one of two things to happen. You need them to throw the ball a lot more, or you need him to have an extremely high touchdown rate. That's basically it. And not to say that either of those two things can't happen, but you need them to change. Or you need him to be very on the positive side of that regression type stat. Not that it can't happen, but that's kind of what you need. And again, I'm open to the idea that they're going to throw the ball a lot more. When I say a lot more, you know, 20% more, which would help Bateman's volume for sure. So that leaves us with basically, you know, what's the decision in the tier? Now, I ultimately don't think it probably matters. I think that the argument I think the argument's pretty strong. I think the argument for Trey Sermon is this. When you look at third round running backs, their hit rates are pretty good, right? I mean, they're pretty good. Some of it was actually inefficient in terms of they were better than second rounders for a while. It sort of eased out, like, depending on how you look at the sample size on it. You know, it can be a little bit different if you just looked at the century, yeah, it's pretty efficient. If you looked at the last like 10 years or so, third rounders have beaten by some measure second rounders. Again, I don't think that that's true because it doesn't make sense that it would be true. So I think that I'll take the larger sample, and I believe that's more representative. But it's 45%, and that matches up fairly well with first round wide receivers, which is at 48%. So it's not that far off. I think the difference is when you're looking at third round running backs, the difference is that they tend to have basically about a third of the guys that hit become multiple hits for top 12 seasonal finishes, right? And that's kind of the elite tier of the position. What I just, you know, I, you need a benchmark to sort of measure it. That's what I would sort of measure it as, you know, two elite finishes. So about a third of the guys that hit do that, which trails wide receivers, right? So 15% of the running backs, third round running backs, have hit two top 12 seasonal finishes. And 21% of 22% of wide receivers drafted in the first round have done so. That's about 50% more. So that's a big, you know, that's about a 50% improvement. That is a big deal. But again, we're using sort of base rates. We're using sort of, you know, that is a movement type thing. I think you look at a lot of the profiles, it's probably not the best year for the profiles of guys like Devonta Smith, of guys like Jalen Waddle. Those profiles aren't historically strong. Devonta Smith broke out late. That's one thing. The other thing too is his size, and that you combine those things and that leaves him looking like an outlier. Can he hit? Sure. But when I sort of look at profiles, he's going to be lower on a base rate than that 47, 48% hit rate for the wide receiver position. Same thing with Waddle. I think Bateman's fair to put him at, or maybe even above the base rate for the position. I think that that's fair. So, you know, that puts you about 50%. So I could see the argument for Bateman over Sermon. My argument for Sermon is this. Like, there's four running backs in this class that can make a huge difference in terms of tilt your league, tilt the landscape. Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams, Trey Sermon. There are essentially six guys in the Trey Sermon range of the position that all look in that same bucket, right? The bad first round wide receivers, the good second round wide receivers, essentially, simplistically. To me, it's supply and demand, right? To me, it's two things. For me, it's supply and demand. There's a shortage of difference making running backs, and they should go higher in the draft. I guess a third, there's really three things. That's one. Number two is the situation. And I don't usually do situation. Again, I've kind of gone round and round on the fact that I'm not going to dock Bateman for situation because I think it could change. And when you sort of, like, I think it could get better. So I'll be situation neutral with the idea that, like, it might not be better, but I'll be situation neutral on Bateman. I'll treat him situation neutral. Listen, it could get better. I think it's a once in every, like, 3, 4, 5 years that I really take a big time stand on a situation being excellent. And I'm pretty sure that the last one that I did was Kamara over, was Kamara in New Orleans. I don't remember a time since then where I said the situation is like should really, really, really move this player. I'm just racking my brain. You know, even Dylan, it was, I think, the pedigree and the player more than the overt situation. I think Sermon to San Francisco is a Kamara to New Orleans type scenario. Because he's going to an offense that has the ability to really churn out running back production, and he's at such a level. He's got three down ability. They talked in their press conference about how they drafted him because he's got starter qualities. Again, that's not to say he's going to start over Mostert or Wilson day one, but they see a starter potential in him, and I think that's notable. This isn't a two down grinder. This is a three down player. And you sort of get to a situation that has shown consistently the ability to have difference-making running backs. And listen, they have constantly, you know, has been their reaction to Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson running the show, right? Being the lead running backs in that, on that team. It is, simply put, they go and they get Wayne Gallman in free agency, and then they draft someone on day three or on day two. That's what their reaction is to their running back situation. They know that they sort of have a need that they need to fill. And that speaks to me. Like, that speaks to me. Pretty clearly it speaks to me. So, all of that said, I think they have the ability to go out and really be, that Trey Sermon has the ability to go out and really be, a difference making high end running back in this class. And so there's a shortage of them, and there's a surplus of wide receivers who kind of blend into a similar tier. And when there's a short supply of something, the price should go up. When there's a big supply of something, the price should go down, right? That should cost less. And interestingly, the market hasn't reacted to that. And the last thing that I would say about the Trey Sermon situation is, what is the single most likely position and pedigree combination to rise in value after year one? Third round running backs. And that means a couple of things to me. It means probably they're undervalued in rookie evaluation, right? I think that if to go up 71%, you know, you're probably undervaluing them as a class. The other thing too is that there's the possibility that there's that we are appreciating maybe their risk or their opportunity. I think that's something too. Is like, hey, all these guys are rising in opportunity, or they're rising in opportunity at a rate that the market isn't quite appreciating. And so that's, you know, and that's sort of including to some of the suboptimal players, right? There's definitely suboptimal third round guys, Darrington Evans, you know, there's those guys for sure. The one thing that I would caution, if you're sort of making the anti-Trey Sermon argument, is, look, we did this with Keyshawn Vaughn. People did that with Keyshawn Vaughn. I wasn't one of them. I didn't think the argument was quite as good for Keyshawn Vaughn, just because I thought that there were other players that I thought were better than him that he was going above. You know, and I thought if you wanted to play a patience game with AJ Dillon, like that, you were basically hemorrhaging odds to basically take a situational bet in a situation that, frankly, he wasn't the lead guy in terms of pedigree. They had Ronald Jones, who I thought was good. And so that's really the thing with Sermon. Like, these other guys are good. The situation could clear out pretty easily in 12 months. And that's sort of the uptick valuation thing. And then listen, if you don't want to, you know, if you don't, I don't think with Trey Sermon need to hang around to find out whether or not he's good enough to be one of these dominant guys. I don't think you need to. If that's not the bet you don't want to make, like, you don't have to make it. I think there will be a time. And if it's a 1 week, 2 week thing where it looks like, hey, he's coming on, he's going to be the guy. You know, you think about what J.K. Dobbins did last year, right? You think about how easy it was to sell James Robinson for a huge surplus off of what you bought him for after a week, 2 weeks, right? I remember cashing out for seconds being like, oh, this can't last. But that was well above the fourth round UDFA or undrafted, you know, rookie free agent and your rookie class. Like, there's a big opportunity there before he even hit. So that's one part of the profile that I think that you don't necessarily need to get for him all the way to hit. You can go with, you can cash it out before you sort of get to, hey, is Shanahan really going to give him all this opportunity? When you get to a spot where he gets a work share, or he gets like a big week or has that big uptick, like, you're probably going to see an uptick in valuation that you can cash out and not necessarily even need to stay and see if he's going to be the guy. So that's really the argument with Sermon. Like, I think you can stay and see if he's the guy, and you can sort of, you know, take that rookie pick and try and, you know, turn it into a huge profit, or you can sort of cash out and take a profit. Right, you can do both. I think there's a lot of different outs with Trey Sermon, and that's really the thing, you know. So that's really my argument for Trey Sermon. I will say, I have found someone that's as close as that has him at essentially the exact same spot. I would take Mac Jones ahead of Trey Sermon, but I think that they are in the same tier. I have I'll just say I found the person that has him in the same spot. And coincidentally, I didn't talk to the person about it. And I figured the person would come way in below where I did, because I was talking to him when the Trey Sermon pick was made. And my instant reaction was, listen, this is Kamara to New Orleans type landing spot. And it was my co-host at Football Guys, Chad Parsons. He's got him in the same spot. And we're way ahead of market. And we didn't talk about that. I was stunned to see it when I opened up his rookie board. I had to text him and tell him that I thought we were going to be way off on the exact number. With the exact same tier, by the way, too, which is even creepier. We can be simpatico at points, and that's one of those cases. I will say that Bateman over Trey Sermon probably doesn't matter. Because Trey Sermon, if you look at some of the, you know, I did some what I call espionage, right? I looked around some of the other, you know, other ranking services, people, you know, other sites. When you sort of look at their, when you look at where their ranks are, Trey Sermon, 18.9. When you look at Bateman, 11.5, which is just ahead of Mac Jones at 12.96. It probably doesn't matter, right? I think if you get to the 1-2 turn and you're targeting Sermon, I think you can make that happen. So it doesn't really matter if you take him over Bateman. It doesn't matter if you take him over Mac Jones. You can come in, I think, right behind that tier and double up in that tier. Like, that's a place where I think it's fine to double up in. And honestly, if you wanted to trade down from like Zach Wilson and it allowed you to sort of double up, I don't think it's necessarily the worst idea in the world. I know you're giving up some of that pedigree, but I think if you could hit Mac Jones and Sermon, or Mac Jones and Bateman, or you could manage to hit three of them instead of hitting Zach Wilson, I think that's a really interesting idea. So that's my push for him, right? And I think that the bet is one that's it's a big reward. I think it's a big reward. I think success for Devonta Smith, success for Jalen Waddle, not sure that's league tilting. And if you sort of at the end of the day come back and say, listen, there's a chance that who from that tier is the highest, and is it Trey Sermon? Like, probably not would be the most likely guess, right? If I think the odds would tell you that someone else in the tier probably ends up being better than Sermon. The problem is you got to pick that person. You have to pick them. And for me, I think the most likely bet, or the highest impact bet, is that Trey Sermon is the one that makes a huge difference. That I think if he's the player that can make the biggest difference, has the odds to make the biggest difference, and that there's chances, of course, that other people will. But he's the one, I think, that has the highest likelihood to do it. That's my argument for Trey Sermon. So after that, I mean, I think I did some what I consider espionage. It's just aggregation, really. Some interesting ones: Rondale Moore, 16.2, Terrace Marshall, 15.8. So going ahead of Rondale Moore, Elijah Moore, 14.5, and that's that, you know, the average where they're going in terms of, I think it's like three or four different services that I did, or ranking sites that I sort of looked at. So again, that tier is interesting in terms of they all look pretty similar. Kadarius Toney's down at 20.78, and then it is a tier break. Some guys that I think are target guys, Pat Freiermuth, 22.3. You know, if that you're at that 2-3 turn, I think that's a spot you can get inside of. You know, if you can try and say, hey, listen, I'm going to try and get inside the Pat Freiermuth line and just add them, especially in tight end premium, you know, just add these safe league leagues, I'm going to just take another shot at a tight end and just kind of keep taking the Cole Kmet bet. Fine doing that. But yeah, I mean, that's really it. And then sort of down the line, you know, I could sort of go both ways on Ramondre Stevenson. And I've got his name right after screwing it up all draft night. Punch drunk, undoubtedly punch drunk. I could sort of go a couple of ways, and I could go a couple of ways on the New England running back situation. With Cam Newton, I think that they're going to produce rushing touchdowns for their quarterback. without Cam Newton, I don't think Mac Jones is going to do that. If the offense can be effective, I think the goal line cracks are going to come from, if it's Sony Michel, if it's Ramondre Stevenson, if it's Damian Harris. I think it opens up opportunities for a running back that we wouldn't necessarily think of in a Cam Newton led offense. So that's one of the things there that to me is interesting. I like the player a lot. I think he has really interesting three down skill set, and that's to me a profile that I really like. But it seems like it's buried. Sony Michel, they could potentially get out of. They could potentially move on from him. You know, I was reading something about them that, hey, listen, like, they're kind of quick to turn the page, right? And if you sort of look at that premise from the tight ends, like, they took a bunch of tight ends last year, in terms of, I say a bunch, Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene, and they realized after a year, like, hey, that's just not going to fly. And they move on relatively quickly, address it in free agency. Sony Michel came in. He wasn't a world beater in his first year. Who knows what they saw, but they come back and address it with Damian Harris. Now they come back and address the position again with Ramondre Stevenson. Again, Harris has better capital, but I think the idea that Ramondre Stevenson is there might be a reflection that they don't necessarily see this as a solve situation, right? They don't necessarily think that they're going to rely on Sony Michel. I think that's a really interesting situation. If you're looking in round three, he's like firmly in the middle of round three. Chuba Hubbard is one that, like, I could go both ways on. I think the profile is pretty good. I think his 2020 performance is pretty crummy, but I get it. I think he's one that, as a backup to Christian McCaffrey might teach him some things, I think is one good thing. And listen, he could be an injury away in an offense that's pretty creative, right? I think that's a situation firmly in round three. Like, that's would be a go-to. You know, if I'm going to sort of try and tackle in a rough class, like, that's not a bad situation to go to. So him and Stevenson are interesting in the third round there. Again, I think he can sort of go, like, Mond is just above him. Just above those guys, with Davis Mills in the real early third as well. Kyle Trask right at the 2-3 turn. Kenny Gainwell right at the 2-3 turn as well. So all of those guys in that range, I mean, do you want to take a developmental shot at a tight end or a developmental shot at a quarterback? Like, Davis Mills, I guess, is probably the most likely one. I was listening to some information today that Minnesota was potentially in the market for Justin Fields. Does that make Christian Kirk maybe expendable, something like that, over the next couple of years? Maybe. Maybe that's what we'll end up seeing. Or maybe next year, right? Are they going to readdress the position, something like that? Is that what they see in Kellen Mond? Right? Is this a Jalen Hurts type situation? I'm open to that idea. Again, in the third round, I think it kind of depends on what type of bet you want to make. I think of those guys, of Trask, Mond, and Mills, I can see the argument for all three of them. I think they each have different types of arguments. And if you want to sort of, my go-to might be just take the cheapest one. I don't have a strong take in there. I sort of see the arguments for all of them. And similarly with, like, Chuba Hubbard, Ramondre Stevenson as well, and Kenny Gainwell. Like, they all kind of blend together. Yeah, they have different types of profiles. I think they all kind of blend together. I think the most likely one to be a true impact guy, just because he can do pretty much everything. And if things broke right, like, hey, listen, they kind of tire of Sony Michel, Damian Harris gets hurt, Ramondre Stevenson could be a full three-down guy. Is that something you want to bet in New England? we've done this road before, but that's one of the things there that I think is, I just think it's interesting. I just think it's interesting. The other thing too is, like, you look at a guy like Tutu Atwell, and that he's going in that same range. Like, I just don't know when you're going to start him. I'm not sure when you're going to start Ramondre Stevenson, but I'll be able to tell you the week, I think, in advance to start him. Couldn't tell you that for Tutu Atwell. If Tutu Atwell goes, like, 35 for 650 and three touchdowns, like, I'm probably not doing better than random at picking what weeks he's actually usable. So that's that would be really my my sort of advocacy for that range of the position over a guy like Atwell. Yeah, and so that's pretty much the situation. Kenny Ngonwu is a guy that jumped out to me on tape. I know they got a Devy guy that's there, and probably more interesting, and that's probably why he largely didn't play. But you're looking like down in the 60s of the position. I think he should be well higher than that, just on the off chance we're wrong about Madison, right? And even if we're not, you know, Madison popped up in actually trade negotiations or trade rumors earlier this year, which didn't make a ton of sense to me, but maybe there's something there. Yeah, I'm not sure. And, you know, Madison's going to be a free agent, and in 2 years, Ngonwu could potentially develop into maybe being an injury away guy. So I think that's an interesting one too. Bet on that. You know, I like that athletic profile where he could do something with it. And he's not limited. He's maybe limited in terms of what he did in college, but I think he's got some physical ability if they put him on a developmental. Yeah, I'll make him return kicks, which is all stuff that he can do. He can play teams, and maybe he develops into something. Like, I think there's worse bets to take down in like the late fourth round, into the fifth, sixth round, something like that, in your deeper rookie drafts.
A couple other guys to note here. Khalil Herbert, it's a potential you know, we'll see with Damian Williams what the backup situation is in Chicago, but that's one that could potentially stick as being an injury way guy. So that's one to note there. Chris Evans in Cincinnati as well. He's on the older side, but like you could see, he's got prototypical size. Went to Michigan, kind of underproduced there. And is, like I said, he's on the older career arc, but you could potentially see him. You know, is it Perine? Yeah, how certain is that backup job? Like, that's one I think to monitor as well. But that's probably a little bit later on as well. And those are the real big ones there. Larry Rountree as well, out of out with the Chargers, is one that backup job is not necessarily certain. I think Joshua Kelly probably gets a first crack at it. Joshua Kelly being a early day three pick last year, kind of disappointed, but Justin Jackson's also there as well. So he's a little bit undersized, but it's been pretty productive on like a per touch basis. So that would be one that I think that there's an outside shot that he could potentially be, you know, make that depth chart and have some usage. The other one too, Jake Funk. He was a guy that liked the athleticism quite a bit, had a really like minimal career injury, sort of all over the place, but tested pretty well, ends up with the Rams in a situation that, you know, outside of Akers and Daryl Henderson, there's not a ton there. So be on the lookout for that one as well. If I'm just sort of taking a shot, he's one that just the athleticism, like we'll take a shot on it. A little bit undersized, like I said, massively underproducing in college, but we'll take a shot on that, like late, you know, that could be like late fourth, fifth round, something like that. I don't mind taking a shot there, and it's a quick reveal. If he gets cut, you cut him, move on. That's a waiver wire spot, something like that, consolidating your roster as you go along, which you're gonna have to do. So it's better to have early reveals than be in the Jeff Janis situation. So yeah, so that'll pretty much do it. Again, the tiers are up there. There's just some specific spots I figured I would touch on that have come up. And so that's where we're at. So until next time, continue to embrace the variance. We'll talk again very soon.